And I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 5016 and 5017. We'll be continuing with public testimony today. We are going to start with Representative Doherty. And after that, we'll be giving preference to anybody that was here yesterday and signed up and didn't get to testify. So, Maggie, you're on.
Mr. Chair, while the representative comes up, I just want to note that we're going to try to take the first, those that signed up yesterday. We have a number of sheets, not quite as many, but four or five sheets already filled. I can't guarantee we'll get to everyone today. Again, the three-minute limit counts for everyone. It goes, I think it goes yellow at 1 minute and starts flashing at 30 seconds. And once you see red, wrap it up quickly. So, and we'll try to, and if we can't go between the two lists on the day, I apologize. So if we get toward the end of the day and you testified yesterday, please come up to the side and if we haven't called you, and we'll try to move things around. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. And not only that, but this, it makes a lot of noise, that sign. For the record, I'm Representative Margaret Doherty. I am the representative for House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland. And I'm here today to encourage passage on to the Ways and Means of House Bill 2545 and House Bill 2846. House Bill 2545 is a bill that will the dollar amount is $2.39 million, but it will bring in $5.1 million in federal nutrition funds from the federal government. And what that is to pick up the cost of the reduced lunch that we now have in the state of Oregon. There are about 30,000 children that are on reduced lunch, and Gita from Portland Public Schools will be talking about the effect that we have on the reduced lunch kids. But it will pay for the reduced lunch, and so basically the children in Oregon who qualify will all be on free lunch. And so it dramatically expands the program. It will be bringing in, the estimate is $5.1 million in from the federal government because of increased participation in the program. The second policy bill deals with what we call breakfast after the bell. Currently, a lot of schools have breakfast for children that qualify, but they have to come before school starts because breakfast is not considered instruction time. And so what this would do is it gives up to 15 minutes after the bell rings for breakfast that would be considered instruction time. We asked for 5 minutes. Department of Ed requested 15 minutes. And so with this, the kids walk in, they grab their breakfast, they get their portfolios, they start working on things. And because, again, this is another program that will probably increase participation because a lot of kids could not get to school before the bell, and so they did not eat the breakfast, that actually they figure another for $192,832, it will bring in probably close to $7 million in federal nutrition funds. So we all know that kids perform better when they have full stomachs, and this is a very smart investment for Oregon's future and an excellent way to improve schools. I encourage passage of House Bill 2445 and 2846.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Senator Monroe, Representative Comp, and members of the committee, my name is Geeta Grater-Sweeney, and I'm the director at Portland Public Schools and Nutrition Services. And I'm here today to support funding for the reduced price meal category for students that are currently having to pay 40 cents for lunch. Nutrition Services' mission is to provide a healthy, delicious, nutrient-rich meal so kids are ready to learn. This bill would help those kids in the reduced price category. Currently, we have 25 schools that are under what's called the Community Eligibility Program, where all students are able to eat a free breakfast and lunch. However, at 59 schools, we have 1,400 students who are not able to receive the free meal. And this bill would help cover that cost so that those kids in that reduced price category wouldn't have to pay the 40 cents for lunch. These students come from very hardworking families. They're just really struggling to be able to meet just daily living. And oftentimes, food is the last thing that they spend money on. So these meals are really important for our students. In particular, a story that was just recently shared with me by one of my leads is that kids as young as 7 years old will come to the cafeteria to pay for their lunch. They come with their pennies, their dimes, their nickels, just and sometimes even just 40 pennies, and they have fuzz on them, little white pieces of fuzz. And our staff affectionately calls this the couch fund because the kids literally had to look and, you know, money falls out of your pockets when you're sitting on the couch. They're digging money out of the couches to pay for those meals. So this would really help these students. $70 a year for lunch doesn't is not a lot of money for most of us that are sitting in this room, but for these families, it's a huge burden. I would like to conclude by asking your support of this bill to help pay for these students in the reduced price category so that they don't have to search for their 40 cents in the couch every day trying to come up with their lunch money, and they can come to the cafeteria without worry of where their next the money will come from. Thank you very much for your time.
We're open for
Thank
questions.
Thank you, and make sure you convey this message to Representative Buckley and Senator Devlin that they would send us those bills to this subcommittee so we can act on them.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, ladies.
Any questions?
We appreciate it.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
And with that, we will call the next panel, Kayla Rask, Joe Lang, and Michelle Emery.
And on deck, why don't you say
that? And on deck will be Susan Lundover, Sally Selman, James Barton, and Martha
Brooks.
Okay. Okay, who's first?
I will be.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Co-Chair Kopp and Monroe, and members of the committee. My name is Joseph Lang, and I work for Northwest Family Services and serve as the PreventNet site coordinator at Alder Creek Middle School in Milwaukee. And today I am speaking in favor of House Bill 5016. Thank you for allowing us to be here and hearing our voices. As a native of Oregon, I have a deep appreciation and sense of pride in this state. And for all of its wonder and beauty, it is no secret to anyone here that there are enormous challenges we are facing in regards to our youth's graduation and truancy rates. I hope to share with you a small piece of how PreventNet, through the YDC funding, plays an active role towards the goal of turning this around. Last month, I had the privilege of taking a class of ELD students to Portland State's campus. These students are in the process of learning English and hoping to represent the first generation in their families to graduate college. They were able to take a tour with the current student who faced the same challenges as them. Afterwards, the students were all very excited about their experience and anxious to follow up the trip this May with a visit to a local community college as well. Experiences and relationships like this inspire youth to look forward beyond their past and current circumstances and helps them see their challenge as an opportunity. A while ago, I met with a young man named Henry. I have changed his name for this testimony. Henry had been chronically absent from school and had recently been called to truancy court. In meeting with him, I learned that his family situation was in flux and he was having a hard time feeling motivated to come to school and overwhelmed about the expectations placed upon him. Henry and I sat down and set two goals regarding his schoolwork and attendance. We talked about different supports that he had around him and steps he could take to help accomplish these goals. When recapping the plan we had made, I asked him if he felt confident in achieving his new goals. He told me, yes, I love setting goals and I feel really good when I achieve them. Henry has been to school every day since this conversation and is actively working with his teachers to get caught up on time lost. Henry told me that the reason behind his recent spike in attendance was due to feeling supported in his pursuit to accomplish these goals. This is one small example of how we can continue to make an impact on these students one at a time. We appreciate your time and energy and continued support for our PreventNet program, for it is the main source of funding is through the Youth Development Council. I appreciate your time very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, real quick, the yellow light goes on at yellow, or the yellow light goes on at 30 seconds, so just keep that in mind. I may have misstated before.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Emery, and I am a PreventNet site coordinator in Sandy, Oregon, at a school called Cedar Ridge Middle School. And as with what Joe has talked about, I would like to be in support of that bill as well, 5016. The money that that comes from that allows us to make connections with kids who otherwise, as Joe was saying, would fall through the cracks. And middle school is a really a difficult time, as you, well, it was for me, so I'm assuming that it was for most other people as well. And sometimes just knowing that there's someone there that cares, as Joe talked about, that was what made the difference for this child. So over the years, the programs and the measures of success have changed, but the program has always stayed successful, usually over 80 to 90%, meaning that we're able to meet those goals, some of which are helping them move ahead a grade level, or in a, well, yeah, from a B to a A or from a F to a D many times. And sometimes that's what makes the difference. Giving these kids a little bit of success will go a long way. I just wanted to give you a story about Timmy, also not his real name, but he's been a core student at our school for 2.5 years. And in that time, I've seen administrators, teachers, everybody tries to connect with him. And he has just not been able to connect with anyone. What ended up happening was that he decided that he wanted to come visit a class that I was holding at a local youth mentoring center. I think maybe somehow the fact that it was at a different location other than school gave him the leeway to do that. So he came, found that he was getting homework done, and then decided that he would also start attending the homework club that I ran at the school. He now comes to that homework club. He's at homework club 4 days a week. Just Monday, I was meeting with him about his progress report, and it showed that he had a C in language arts, which for some students might not be that great of a thing, but for him, I said it matter-of-factly, well, look at that, you have a C in English and in language arts. He said, what? Then took the paper from me, the biggest smile on his face, and I said, you did it. And he said, I did. And I held up my hand, and he high-fived me. This is a child who screamed at me, get out of my life, when he was in sixth grade. And now he's high-fiving because he has better grades. That's what this money does. It gives the ability to reach kids who otherwise wouldn't be reached. And so, as always, I can tell everybody here is here to ask for more money. That's probably like a parent with six kids trying to decide which one needs shoes the most. So please consider giving money to Prevent Net. Thank you.
Thank you. Kayla?
Co-chairs Comp and Senator Monroe and members of the committee, my name is Kayla Rask, and I too work as a school site coordinator under the PreventNet program in two Clackamas County middle schools, and we are funded by youth development funds. My job is to support youth and families in hopes that they can live, grow, and succeed, and I'm here to testify in support of Bill 5016 and share with you some of the good work that we're already doing. I come here today because I feel as though we have a shared vision and commitment when it comes to Oregon's youth. My vision and commitment is supporting positive youth development, improving student outcomes such as academic success and school engagement, supporting families, and building strong communities where all youth feel like they belong. Today, I want to share with you a story of Alex, whose name I've also changed. I met Alex at the beginning of last year's school year. He was just starting his eighth grade year. I got to know him quickly as he would frequent my office during passing times and lunch and before school and after school. And we initially connected over our shared interest in sports and particularly the Portland Trailblazers. He was bright and funny and kind, and he had many, many strengths and talents, but he also struggled in a lot of areas. I think he frequented my office so much because he was kind of avoiding his classes, to be honest. He was definitely disengaged. His attendance was low and his grades were struggling. He was failing every single class. I learned quickly about some of the hardships that he had faced over the past few years. Lost family members, moving from place to place and being abandoned by his father. I was the first adult in the school to hear Alex's story. Throughout the school year, I connected with Alex's family, providing them resources and connecting him to counseling and after-school activities. I advocated for services within the school that would help engage Alex and improve his grades. As we approached the end of the school year, Alex's main goal was to attend his eighth grade recognition ceremony. In order for him to attend, he had to have passing grades, which is something he struggled with for many years. I worked with him to identify key people to help him reach his goal and focused on highlighting his many strengths and resiliencies that encouraged him to believe in himself. On the last day of school, Alex walked straight in my office. I still think about this and get emotional. And he said, he had a big smile on his face and he just spoke three words, "I did it." And I was lucky enough to share that success with him. And I understand that this is one story and I'm not the only caring adult that helped Alex on his journey. That you guys played an important role in that, and people who support these programs and support funding for these programs play a big part in that. So I encourage you to continue to support programs like this so we can, there can be many more Alexes out there.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you very much. Thank all of you. And we are going to Susan, Sally, James, and Martha. Okay, on deck, Maria Chavez, Leonor Guerrilla, and Diamond Carrillo. They will be next. Okay. Welcome. Who's first?
Good morning. I'm first. My name is Susan Lindauer, co-chair of Senator Monroe and Representative Comp, members of the committee. I'm the executive director of the Children's Trust Fund of Oregon. And for 30 years, we've been promoting healthy child development and the prevention of child abuse with our strategic community-based grants, as well as original research and public awareness. I'm here to urge your support for the increased $10 million investment in the Healthy Families Oregon program as a part of House Bill 5016. Healthy Families Oregon has one of the highest level of evidence among home visiting programs nationally. Most of our state programs focus on child outcomes, but we know that children are not successful without the support, stability, and nurturing of their families during these critical years of brain development. Healthy Families is also unique in that it's voluntary, so that parents do not feel the same stigma of participation as other mandated programs. The latest data on child abuse and neglect shows that Oregon will pay upwards of $2.1 billion over the lifetime of children abused in our state in 2013 alone. For each case of abuse, that is $210,000. But we know that child abuse and neglect is preventable. And we invest in 39 grantees across the state, including relief nurseries and home visitation programs that provide these services that are proven to be effective in reducing incidents of child abuse and neglect. We know the difference that home visiting can make for parents, especially new parents who are at risk and under significant stress because they are taking care of a new baby and other stress factors. Although she wasn't able to be here today, AJ, a teen parent who participates in one of our home visiting programs at the next door in Hood River, provided testimony to you, and we wanted to share her thoughts. My home visitor has helped me through a lot of challenges. In the beginning with a newborn baby, she taught me what a baby needed, how to support his development, and how to keep him safe, and how to support him through all the milestones of crawling, walking, learning to say words. Now with a toddler, I'm learning positive ways to discipline my son and ways to help him learn more. And I'm proud of how much I've accomplished since becoming my son's mom. I also held true to my word to my dad that I would stay in school. I'm on track for graduation with my class. The Trust Fund is proud to invest in home visiting so that young people like AJ get the support they need to be nurturing parents. But what we can offer is limited compared to the state funding, which would allow HFO to be available and accessible for parents in every county. This $10 million increase would support an additional 1,000 children and their parents. Home visiting can be a platform for the identification and referral to other essential support services, and it's important we continue to build this network of early learning hubs so that families can access and be referred to a coordinated array of early learning family services to meet their children's needs as quickly and as efficiently as possible. I know you have very difficult...
Thank you, and we're going to have to keep it moving.
I know you have difficult financial decisions ahead, and I just want to say we're very fortunate to have one of our grantees with us from the Pearl Buck Center in Eugene.
So, okay, let's hear from you.
Co-Chair Senator Monroe and Representative Comp, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Sally Steinman, and I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of the home visiting program at Pearl Buck Preschool. Pearl Buck Preschool is located in Eugene, Oregon, and is a tuition-free preschool program that supports families where a caregiver has a cognitive limitation. I work as a home visitor, and I support families through parent education, community referrals, basic needs supports, and developmental screenings. I also support families through an innovative intervention created by the University of Oregon and OSLP called FIND. This stands for Filming Interactions to Nurture Development. It's a 10-week video coaching intervention which shows parents or caregivers things they're already doing that promote healthy brain growth in their child. We do this by filming the caregiver interacting with their child while doing an everyday activity such as eating or playing. The film is then edited down to short clips of positive micro-social interactions and shown to them at the next visit. It's a strength-based intervention, so only positive interactions are highlighted. The coaching session discusses ways the parents respond in a positive, meaningful way. Aside from the caregiver having an intellectual disability, many of our families are impacted by significant stressors which impede parent responsiveness. These stressors include poverty, mental health conditions, transportation barriers, and social isolation. FIND identifies and reinforces positive, meaningful responses by showing parents videos of them already doing it. They only see and hear the good stuff that they're doing. And for many of our families, this is the only time they've ever received praise. We all know how challenging parenting can be and the minimal, if any, recognition a caregiver receives. Our FIND parents are getting genuine praise about what they're already doing, and that's truly helping their child's brain grow.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. We're going to have to hold it to 3 minutes.
Okay.
Why don't you go ahead?
All right.
Now, these mics are very sensitive. Notice how far away from this mic I am, and you're having no trouble hearing me. So you don't have to, like, eat a banana. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is James Barda. I am the legislative director for Children First for Oregon. And our mission is to help Oregon be the best place possible to be a kid. And I'm here to talk about three of the programs that are within the education budget. Our executive director, Tanya Hunt, hopes to speak directly to the K-12 budget. But one of those programs is the one that's already been ably described by my co-panelists. And I just want to point out and echo the comment that it's one of the most researched or demonstrated and researched to be one of the most effective programs. And I'm going to be making reference to research results that are in my written testimony, and I'd be happy to discuss any of those research findings more fully offline. But in any case, some of the other results that we've seen in research is lower infant mortality. There's greater income over the course of the life of the children, and there's fewer convictions for the mothers that participate, you know, criminal convictions, and for, in one study, the daughters who participate. So really, we're talking about a program that down the road will pay for itself and reduce social service costs. And some estimates are 2-to-1, but many studies have demonstrated a much higher return on this investment of $10 million that we're asking here. Another program I wanted to talk about is pre-K. Now, we've already had people discussing that as well, but again, this is a program that will boost grade-level reading, will close achievement caps, and again, boost the lifetime income of participants. The request for the additional $30 million for pre-K is going to reach the neediest of Oregonians. These are children who are below the poverty line, and $30 million will allow us to reach 1,500 more of these children who can enjoy the benefits that have been demonstrated in this research. And finally, I want to echo Representative Doherty's comments about providing free lunch for those children who are eligible for reduced lunch. I just want to emphasize the point she made about the return. So we have children who get reduced lunch, and these stories that have been told, but toward the end of the month, they don't participate in it. And so we're losing that federal match dollar. So really, we're talking about millions of dollars that will come from the federal government that help Oregon's neediest families. So I appreciate your attention on this and your difficult decisions, but I'm hoping that we continue to make investment for Oregon's children.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee, my name is Martha Brooks, and I am the state director for Fight Crime, Invest in Kids, which is a bipartisan nonprofit organization of senior law enforcement officials with over 160 members here in Oregon. Our members believe criminals must be put behind bars, but they are also dedicated to preventing crime by investing in proven programs that get kids started on the right track. I'm here today on behalf of those members to ask you to increase investments in Healthy Families Oregon by $10 million, Head Start and Preschool for Kids 200% of Poverty by $30 million, the Kindergarten and Innovation Fund by $5 million, add $15 million to the Early Intervention and Childhood Services, and continue an investment and commitment to building a strong and supportive Early Learning Hub network. I submitted testimony, and you have that access. But I want to talk to you today about something different, about where this comes from in my heart. I've done this for a long, long time, but I do this because I believe in the programs. I have a hard time in advocating for something that I don't believe in. In fact, I can't. So we all have commitment to do the very best for our kids and to make those investments go as far as possible so that they can succeed. You heard testimony yesterday that in Oregon, for every dollar spent on children aged 6 to 17, we only spend 14 cents on children 0 to age 5. Why is that? 85 to 90% of brain development happens 0 to 5. Nearly 50% of all Oregon child abuse and neglect cases happen between 0 and 5. Yearly, approximately 45,000 babies are born in Oregon, yet we serve only 15% of the 135,000 kids aged 0 to 3. And I've watched over the course of my time doing this advocacy from about 12 years ago of the budget for Healthy Families, it was Healthy Start, go from about $26 to $22 million down to $16. Each year, we only serve approximately 25% of low income in pre-K. New parents, as you heard yesterday, struggle the most, yet wait until later. Why wait? And wait for what? Returns on investment are the greatest in these early years. This is where we get the biggest bang for our buck. Without a foundation, kids stumble again and again on their path to graduation. They start kindergarten already behind other kids and never, ever catch up. Year after year, I feel like we beg for the crumbs off the table for these programs. I can tell you that investments early on will solve problems. And I'm going to be very blunt. I worry about our children. I don't need another program to advocate for. We don't need another silver bullet. What we need is to invest in the programs we already have that we already know work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we will go to Maria, Leonore, and Diamond. And on deck will be Laura Pope and the students that are coming with her, Jennifer, Zalima, Will, and Ariel. Welcome.
Good morning. Co-chair Senator Monroe and Representative Kump and members of the committee. My name is Maria Chavez. I'm a parent of the Mount Hood Community College Head Start, and I'm here to represent the Oregon Head Start. I want to start by telling you that I have a 4-year-old girl and a 6-year-old boy that I'm very proud of because they're very successful in school right now. My son is currently advanced in literature, writing, and math as a second grade level, and he's barely in first. I wanted to tell you that I'm a living proof that Head Start works because it's not a program that only focuses on child, it focuses on families as well. 4 years ago, I had a husband that was very irresponsible and alcoholic. Me being a mom of two without a legal status in this country, and my husband, as a U.S. citizen, he had a very good opportunity on going back to school and getting a good career, but he wouldn't listen. Finally, after getting the help for my family working at the Head Start program, she gave me a little paper that told me about a welding program that I was going to start in the Mount Hood Community College. I told my husband he was interested. He finished the certificate. He got certified. 2 weeks before graduating, he had two job opportunities. He had to decide for the best. I can tell you now that he is successfully working. It's been a year now since he graduated. He's getting paid really good. But we needed that opportunity, and Head Start gave us that opportunity. Head Start opened doors to us. They gave us the resources that we needed. Like I said, they just didn't focus on my child. They focused on us as well, on our needs. And it was a blessing to be part of the program. I still am. We still have one more year to go. Maybe I'm currently 7 weeks pregnant with my third baby. Maybe he will be part of the program as well. I want to appreciate for you for being here and listening to us, to what we have to say. And it's very, very important that to get a little more for other families that are going through what I went through, you know, to give them that opportunity, to give them that help that I received. I don't know how to pay back to my program, to the people that were there to help me. I guess it's all I can do. I see their passion, their love, when they receive the children, when they receive the families, when they listen to us. I know that to get something you need, you have to struggle. You have to go to difficult situations. You might have to give up something, and I'm pretty sure you guys have, you know, probably went through that to get what you are right now, to be successful. And we needed that opportunity, and Head Start gave us the opportunity. I didn't know where to go. I have no family. My family is in my country, in Mexico. My family was my husband, my two children, and he wasn't there for me. He wasn't there to support me. I felt like I was just by myself. But when they came to me and they told me, I'm here to help you, I'm here to listen to you, they did. No judgment, no criticism. Till now, they have been there. They have given me this support. I'm currently working on my GED. I can tell you now that I have a immigration status, finally. And I want to take that opportunity that they're giving me to be successful in life, because I think I deserve it as a woman and as a mother. Not only for my husband to be successful, but for me as well, to show my children that it's never too late, that it's okay to make mistakes, but it's better if you stand up and if you keep going. Thank you so much for listening to me, and I want to let you know that I will try my best to translate for Leonor. She doesn't speak English.
Thank you. Did your children get to avail themselves of the new Head Start facility on the Mount Hood campus?
No, probably my daughter will be if I get enrolled to the student program. Since I'm going to be going to school, to the college, then I have that open door for her to be the full day.
This committee a few years ago voted for the money to build that new Head Start facility on the campus there.
I am aware of that, and thank you so much. It has been grateful, not for me, probably in the future, but for parents that I know that they have taken advantage of that program. It's a beautiful, beautiful site. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you. And go ahead.
Okay. Buen día. Mi nombre es Leonor Guerra, y estoy como presidenta del Consejo de Políticas de Community Action.
Muy buenos días. Good morning. My name is Leonor Guerra, and I'm a representative for the Policy Council for Community Action.
Y estoy aquí para agradecer el apoyo financiero que ustedes brindan a dicha institución, ya que sin esos fondos muchas cosas no se podrían hacer.
And I'm here to thank you for the funds that you have given us. So, I mean, without those funds, we were not had the help and then to cover the needs that we have.
Esta es mi primera experiencia en Head Start, y agradezco mucho, pues, porque no solo aprendo, sino a conocer lo que se da dentro de las decisiones, sino también a ver cómo se manejan los fondos y cómo se administran.
This is my first time in the Policy Council and the Head Start program, and I am very thankful to see and to help and manage through the Policy Council make good decisions for the program.
Y de esa forma puedo ver el amor que y empeño que pone Head Start en la administración acerca de los fondos y
And I, thanks to being part of the Policy Council, I can see the love and passion of the workers and to see how they use and manage the funds that we receive for the whole program.
Y qué bueno sería tener un poquito más de fondos para poder emprender nuevos retos para poder beneficiar siempre a los niños en cuanto a la educación.
And how great will it be to have more funds to benefit other people that need the help as well.
Gracias por este tiempo y que Dios les siga dando la sabiduría para que puedan emprender nuevos retos.
Thank you for your time, and may God bless you for what you're doing for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you. You're on.
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe and members of the committee. My name is Diamond Carrillo. I am from Independence, Oregon. I was born and raised in Oregon. My son is 4 years old and is currently enrolled in the Head Start program at the Independence Site for Community Action. I am the site representative for Independence, and I am the co-chair for the Policy Council of the Parents for the boards. I am here to express my thanks for the money that you have already given us and to express the need for what we have as well as for a little bit more. I know the program has helped my son grow tremendously. It has given him friends. It has expanded his education. He looks forward to going every single day, and for my son, I know that that's important. Give you a little bit of background on my child. My son is half Hispanic, half African American. He's from a single parent home of low income, so as most of you probably know, a lot of the odds are not in his favor. Statistically speaking, he is already at risk. I mean, we come from family of low incomes, and we are already cusp as a family of at-risk youth. I think that education is an amazing foundation to make sure that these youths grow and don't end up in places where they need social services or they're incarcerated. I think that we need to make sure that we are investing in our kids' future and putting money into a solid foundation to make sure that they're growing and expanding and not falling behind in a cusp and we're having to catch up to them later. I grew up in a town that is extremely small and has seen a lot of these effects from budget cuts. I saw them when I was in high school. I saw them as my nieces and nephews gone through high school, my younger cousins. I've seen the loss of sports, the regain of sports, the shortness of lunch breaks, the cuts of reduced lunches, the not being able to afford lunches, the food inadequate, the education inadequate. I've seen a police department go up that was extremely large for our community and an extremely large school that could have housed a lot of kids that are now overly crowded and classrooms closed down, which to me is extremely unfortunate because to me it sends a message that it is more important to police our community than it is to educate them. And in the long run, I think it will cost us a lot more money to incarcerate these kids if that's where they're ending up because they're not ending up with an education. And as my son is about to go into kindergarten, I advocate for pre-K and the money for pre-K, but also education in general because he will continue on and hopefully someday be in a position of power to make effect and change and make sure that, you know, somebody of his position, of his color, has the same chances as far as equality, whether it's through his education, through his background, through his race, anything like that, that he is on the same level and playing field as everybody else. Thank you.
And your son is lucky to have a strong mother that's looking out for him.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Madam Co-Chair.
A quick question, because I know we have lots of people, but when my children were 5 years old, I did not send them to kindergarten. I want to hear your voice. Is 6 hours a day of kindergarten too much or too little?
I went to half-day kindergarten, and my aunt has actually been a kindergarten. She's about to retire for 40 years. I in my sense thought maybe it might be too long, but she expressed that, you know, I think kids actually do need the long days in the sense that she doesn't believe that they have enough time to get through to them. And it gives them a stability of, if they don't have stability in their home, at least they have stability in the day through 6 hours. And aside from getting the education, they're getting a personal level of communication with a teacher, an educator, where they will relay that relationship with other people when they go into the community or when they go outside, and they're representing not only themselves but their family and their school, that they tend to be more respectful. They have more understanding for the importance of a relationship, a one-on-one relationship, which is hard to build and kids in a short amount of time, especially if they don't have a solid foundation at home. At least they can get it in a school, in a school classroom setting.
Thank you. That's very, very helpful in making decisions. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Let's bring up Laura Pope, Jennifer Zulema, Will, and Ariel. And children.
No way.
Yes. I apologize that Ariel cannot be here today for the unforeseen circumstances of having a child with special needs. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for coming. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Good morning. Good morning, Co-Chairs Comp and Monroe and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laura Pope, and I'm an early childhood special education specialist and developmental consultant here in Salem, serving Polk County. I'm also a lifelong Oregon resident. Next to me is Zulema Mendoza, mother of happy, playful Emmanuel, Will Carlson, and his funny and creative daughter, Eileen, and Jennifer McAllister with Patrick and Jack.
Patrick and Jack.
We are here to testify in support of the proposed $15 million increase for EIECSE services. There's been a constant decline in our services over the past decade. ODE data from 2010 reflects that current funding was only at 68% of what was needed to fund adequate service levels. Today, it's showing that we're at 30%. We're being able to give only 30% of our students receiving these services an adequate service level. I've known that I wanted to be a part of this career since I worked in a community preschool, and I was able to bond with my children with special needs once given the accommodations that a developmental consultant, much like myself, showed me how to do. I have known that I've wanted to continue this career working with children and families since I've seen the important connection that I'm able to make, not only with the families, whether they need an ear, a shoulder, or a short tidbit about the progress that their child has made that day, which is huge to hear, but also with their child with special needs. That wonderful child who, despite being nonverbal and severely autistic, comes to me with tears and leaves giggling. That wonderful child who's learning in an inclusive preschool classroom to self-regulate, and which is, by the way, a predictor of kindergarten readiness. But honestly, while this is my pride and this is my joy and it keeps me going, with this constant downward spiral, I don't know if it's sustainable for myself. I'm currently based in Polk County, covering at least 5 different cities, so you think about the commute. And I am lucky to only have a caseload of 34. I have coworkers who have caseloads in the mid-40s to 60s. I have occupational therapists who are serving last year up to 80 students. That's not okay. I truly hope to look back 30 years from now and reflect on all that I have learned from my career path. My mother is an educator, and she's been teaching for over 30 years. She tells me that this is the hardest she's ever seen, and I'm only just beginning. Please, I want to prepare more children for the ever-increasing kindergarten expectations. I want to hear more children learn to breathe through their sorrows and smile through their tears. I want to encourage and facilitate more peer growth. I want to help these children make friends who have some who have a very difficult time doing that. I want to be a shoulder for more parents and an understanding ear. Last night, I got an email from one of my parents from 2 years ago. Please let these children reach their full potential.
Thank you very much.
Hi, good morning. morning. My name is Sulema, and I'm a parent of an autistic child. His name is Emmanuel Guzman, and it's his advocate for him. He's currently attending the Teaching and Research Institute on Monmouth on the Western Oregon University campus. This program, the Early Intervention Program, has helped me a lot. First of all, when my pediatrician told me my Emmanuel was fine, he was just being a kid, I knew something was wrong. Something was not good with him. So the program helped me, understand where he was behind, and then gave him a diagnosis of autism, educational one. But I wanted to, I think I was in denial. I didn't want to see it. And they helped me get a medical one. So they they made home visits, and that helped me a lot. How to teach him, how to treat him, understand why he wasn't looking at me, he wasn't listening. He actually was, but it was hard for him to pay attention. After three, he went to school, preschool, and it's been amazing. He has changed a lot. He was just saying like 3 or 5 words at 2. Now he's 3. He's saying phrases. He's looking at me. It's very amazing. This program has helped us a lot. Sorry.
Thank you very much. Why don't you go ahead?
My name is Will Carlson. This is my daughter, Eileen. I can relate to her being so emotional because where I started, Eileen's 4, when she was 2, she would point and scream. If she wanted juice, she'd point and scream. If she was upset, she'd fall on the floor and beat her head on the floor or on the wall. So where we've come to where we are now is, didn't think it was possible, to be honest with you. She was placed in Oakdale Elementary School. They have a class there. She went 2 days a week. She did really well. I put her in Western for a summer program, an inclusion program. And she did really well there, so now she goes to the same school that her child does. I get help 2 days a week, and I pay the other 3. It is a burden on me. I'm lucky I have a good family, and they help out a lot. But I can't imagine for families that weren't as fortunate as me where their kid would be at 4, at 10, at 20. I just feel really fortunate that our programs, and I think we owe it to ourselves and society to invest in children at a young age because it makes a huge difference. I understand about getting emotional. I'm getting emotional because it's a huge transformation, and I couldn't have done it on my own. And these people are amazing, and they do so much. And it really does mean a lot. And for her to sit here with that loud group of people earlier, I was the dad taking her out of Walleries because she couldn't self-control herself and calm down. Uh-huh. And this is just amazing. Allie, do you want to say hi to everybody?
Hi.
Here's the microphone. You want to tell them that you like your school?
Yeah, I like my school.
What do you like about your school?
Playing. And large talking.
Do you have friends?
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. She's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Being kicked out of my chair, so my name is Jennifer McAllister. I'm from Monmouth, Oregon.
Jennifer's talking.
Come here, buddy. We got a microphone for Christmas, so he's ready to sing into the microphone. Patrick and I have been receiving services, help from Willamette ESDs for about a year and a half. He started out, same as Emmanuel, with a delayed speech. And when he started out, he knew 50 words, 50 from, but most of them were numbers 1 through 20. And so he taught himself numbers, and he taught himself how to say his alphabet. But beyond that, he really, really struggled with any kind of communication. The other day, like I said, he's been receiving services for about a year and a half. The other day, he said a five-word sentence, and I repeated it to myself, and I counted them out, and I'm like, wow, that's a five-word sentence. I was amazed, and it's totally attributed to the help that Laura's been giving him and help that with that his other teachers have been giving him and the speech therapy he's been receiving. I've been so grateful and so pleased with his progress that he's made in that amount of time. I can tell you, you asked about all-day kindergarten. The only thing I would say would be, I'd be petrified sending him to all-day kindergarten without these services. If he has to go to all-day kindergarten, I don't know what I would do without having these services available to him beforehand. I can't imagine having sent him without that. I don't know if I would. I might homeschool. I don't know. I'd be very timid. Now, I would do it because of people like Laura, because people are helping him, and he feels comfortable with the preschool environment now, and so he's getting more prepared for what all-day kindergarten will require of him. So because of that, I would do it, but only because he has these things offered to him. Also, without it, we wouldn't be able to afford the preschool. It's so expensive now to have this formal preschool, but because it's offered through the services, then we're able to. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. All of you, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, these are next.
Yep.
Frank Carapello, Omar Murrow, Zach Lee, and Brazen Sanders.
And these are on deck.
And on deck will be, can I read that? Jim Dago, Abinette Hulley, and I can't read that. Sheila.
I think it's Abugak Shiak, maybe. I can't. I'm sorry.
Anyway,
apologize.
They're on deck. Welcome.
Hello.
You're the leader. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Co-Chairs Monroe and Comp and members of the committee. Thank you for your time this morning. My name is Frank Carapello. I'm the Vice President of Education Policy for the Chalkboard Project. Before joining Chalkboard Project this past July, I was honored to serve as a teacher, a principal, and an assistant superintendent in the North Santa Ana and Greater Albany School Districts. As most of you know, Chalkboard's work is centered on developing teachers and building leaders through innovative programs that support the professionals throughout their career. We know that they are the in-school most important factor in student success. Last session, the legislature created a component in this effort with the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning and the Network Fund. Chalkboard's highest priority is to continue to build and strengthen our educator workforce through the network, with approximately $55 million, of which approximately $35 to $40 million is already set statutorily. This is critical for several reasons. Teachers are facing an unprecedented amount of change that I know you are all well aware in the span of a short few years. These enormous shifts in pedagogy and practice obligate us to consider the training and supports needed to ensure their success and to close achievement gaps for students. It's also critical, as over half of Oregon's school districts are small and many are in remote locations, making access to statewide supports even more critical. The supports that you have in a document at your places, there are five key components, and I'll go over them briefly. The School District Collaboration Fund, which needs $23 million to meet continued demand and growing demand to implement these new and innovative practices which are proven to improve student achievement and educator effectiveness. Mentoring for first and second year teachers and administrators should be closer to $17 million, and that will not get us to every new teacher, but it will get us closer. Mentoring accelerates a new teacher's learning to become even more effective in a shorter amount of time. Implementation of performance evaluation and professional development and assessment literacy related to Common Core and educator effectiveness, $10 million should be allocated for this work to continue this training. $3 million should be focused on to support a school leadership initiative to support current and new school leaders. We believe it is time for us to invest in school leadership. We know that they are a critical factor in the effectiveness and can change schools. Finally, $1.5 million is needed to complete the Teach Oregon pilots that are already helping to improve teacher preparation. Two-thirds of Oregon teacher candidates are currently in programs touched by Teach Oregon. When districts do this work in context and with a collaborative process, side-by-side with the district's educators as required by the Collaboration Fund, we see great things for students. We've had extensive third-party analysis done of student data and districts participating in collaboration in class, the precursor to the Collaboration Fund. And participating districts are showing significant impacts in student achievements and closing achievement gaps. They're moving more kids to proficiency and then the rest of the state. And these gains are sustained over time, even when the districts exit from the program. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning. Co-chairs Compton, Monroe, and members of the committee. I am Omar Muto, and I am the crew coordinator at an alternative education program, the Hub, and it's the program is from the Oregon Human Development Corporation that gets the funding from Youth Development Council. I'm here testifying to ask for additional funding for the Youth Development Council. This funding is very essential and crucial for the further involvement of our youth. I myself see first and every day that this program can do and what it has to offer for the students. We re-engage them back into school and have them do volunteering events, give back to their community, complete work readiness training, and build positive relationships along the way. I was part of OHDC as a student in 2010, and they assisted me throughout high school with internships with the city of Beaverton and realizing that I should always live in a constant state of progression to keep moving forward and give it my all. I'm completely grateful for what they've done for me. Even now that I'm working with them, they still push me to accomplish the next step in my life. Their support has brought me great success and has given me opportunities I would have not known about. The Youth Development Council is only set to receive in the next biennium what it currently is receiving now. I'm here to say that it's not enough. We need more funding to fund not just our program, but all the others that are competing for these dollars as well. Our program is innovative, and we're constantly finding effective new techniques to help our youth to become successful. Please help us help more youth by giving us more funds to the YDC. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Braden Sanders. I'm a student at the Hub, which is OHDC's alternative education program.
And did we get your name?
Braden Sanders.
Thank you.
Well, what's different about the alternative education that I'm at and from my regular high school environment was it was a dramatic change. Like, I needed it. I myself couldn't handle the regular high school environment. Like, I could go into detail about it, but I just don't really feel willing to. But their education program has helped me not only with getting credits, but their programs with help finding jobs and give us employment. I get nervous in front of people. it's just the stuff they do for us on a regular basis is so much more different and better than a regular high school. Like, they take us snowboarding. Like, they give us more one-on-one time. Like, the classrooms are so much smaller. And it's so, like, in our classroom, there's probably 12, 13 kids, aside from, like, a regular high school classroom where there's anywhere from 30 to 50 kids. Like, I can have more one-on-one time with the teachers and with my peers too, like working, and they're more willing to help, and they're more driven to help, especially since it's such a smaller environment. It just makes things really easier. That's kind of all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ask him if he wants to go to college.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes. Do you want to go to college?
Do I want to go to college?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do you know which one?
I mean,
Harvard's a little bit of a stretch, but...
Oh, yeah. if I were to choose a university, it would definitely be U of O.
Thank you. Go Ducks.
Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Zach, and I attend the Hub. My name is Zach Lee, and I attend the Hub also. And the change from when I went to traditional high school to the Hub was, it was a dramatic change. Everyone at the Hub, they're just, like, so willing to help you, and it feels like they're there to help you and not just there just to, like, get a paycheck and do a job. there's more one-on-one time for, like, the students if they need help. And I can, like, I don't have to just sit through. And at traditional schooling, I felt, like, not very challenged. And, like, I would just do what everyone else was doing. But at the Hub, I can do, like, what I need, that, like, where I'm challenging myself and also getting credits and learning. And the classrooms are getting so big at the, like, traditional, like, regular high schools. At the Hub, like he said, there's only about 12 students, or maybe like 15 when everyone's there. And you just get more one-on-one time if you need help. And the teachers are just always so willing to help. And I probably wouldn't be graduating and all to graduate if I hadn't enrolled at the Hub. So I really appreciate everything they do for us.
Thank you for coming. Thank all of you.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to Shemet, Ebenet, Holly, and Sheila, somebody.
I think it's Sheik or something close to that. We apologize for our name pronunciation.
We're having trouble with the names.
They have different kinds of names.
Welcome.
So we understand.
Okay. My name is Jimmy Dogo. I am the director of Africa House. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. I feel like we are close to the sun today. This is an African saying, because for us, the African community, this is the first time we have this opportunity to come in this building and testify. Africa House is the only African culturally specific center that provides an array of service to the African immigrant and refugees in Oregon. And we are here to ask for, you know, more funding for the Youth Development Council, because many of African refugees who are coming to the state of Oregon, they bring their kid who either born in refugee camp or grew up in refugee camp. They never been to school because of the situation in refugee camp. So when they come here, the system put them in school according to their age, then their knowledge. So you have a 17 years old in 11th grade cannot read or cannot write their name. And those kids, because they cannot compete with mainstream students, they fail in school. And what happened when they fail in school, they are frustrated. And because when they are brought here, they have zero economic assets, so they are resettled in affected poor neighborhood. So those neighborhoods are already affected with gang issues. So those kids who are frustrated, drop out of school or push out of school, are target recruited by gang members. So many African families are struggling. They don't know what to do in order to help their children. They came here to bring their children in order to give them a bright future. But we are losing our children. For the first time ever, this year we get a funding from the Youth Development Council to provide a gang prevention. Initially, we supposed to provide service to 55 youth. Now we have over 200 youth in waiting list. And we don't know how to handle this. Many families, they know about, you know, issue about warlord, issue about civil war, but they have no idea about urban issues. This is a new trend for us, the gang issue, problem, city issue, and all the. So we are here to seek support for the funding to provide this kind of, you know, gang prevention and intervention for our community. If we don't do this, later on, we going to spend, as a community, spend more money in putting those kids to jail or policing them. So with your help, we want, you know, to get support so that we can educate those kids and save them from joining the street, you know, or being recruited by gang.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Abinette Haile, and I work at Africa House as a youth program coordinator. A little bit to tell you about myself. I am from Ethiopia, and I've been in America for over 30 years. I'm a mother of two. I've worked hard to raise my children. My husband and I, we have helped them to stay focused, to do well, and they have succeeded and finished college. My role here is as a mother, in a way, for the African kids, because I understand what it takes to raise a child and to also help them navigate the system and what they need to succeed. I've been working with the African kids for a few years with small funds here and there. But this year, I have seen how our children are affected by the gang because of dropping out and the barriers that Jimmy just mentioned. We're trying to help them to be successful. We open our doors here in the United States for refugees, but we also want them to succeed. The only way we can do that is if we see their needs and make sure that we have culture-specific programs so these kids can feel supported. Africa House is a very small building. If you come to Portland someday, please come and see us. It's a very tiny place, but we serve over 200 kids that come in and out. Every Saturday, we have homework help. We help the kids with their homework, academically, social needs, challenges, things that they want to talk about. And I see we have so many bright kids, but they need more help. We have one classroom that could probably hold 30 kids, but we serve almost 80 kids every Saturday in that room. We also have success story. I have Abu Bakr sitting next to me, whom we've worked with, and who has done really well. And I would like to have him talk to you. Please, I ask you and beg you to help us support these kids. The only way we can do it is if we have your support and if we have the fund to help them progress.
Where in Portland are you located? I live in Portland.
We are on 102nd and Gleason.
Okay.
If you know ERCO, we're part of ERCO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. I know where that is.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Abu Bakr, but like for short, it's Abu, because a lot of people, they can't understand, don't know how to pronounce it. Abu Bakr Sheikh, and this is Abby and Jimmy, and we are really be happy to be here, especially me. I never been like this kind of places. I'm from Nairobi, Kenya, and I graduated from Madison High School last summer. Abby is my second mom. She has been there for me since day one. She helped me succeed my goals and being the first person in my family to finish high school. Abby helped me get mentor with me to help with my homeworks and other stuff that I needed to be graduate, to be in college right now. To get me ready in college. That mentor, he's still with me. He's been there since in the beginning of the program. Because of the help of I received at the African House, I am not in college, a student, and will graduate with a degree at engineering. I now have the tools to help my family and show the way for my younger siblings. And Abby got a lot of mentors to help the kids with their homework and at the African House. She helps with the homework and whatever they need help with. Abby and the staff has helped kids to stay away from gangs and gang activities. They have invited a police officer to talk about gang members and why is it bad to be and why it's to be one. Abby always goes to our school and checks our counselors and check our grades and how we are doing, and if we have any problem at school or with some problem with our grades, she always helped us, and she's always there for us. Without Africa House, there is nothing for us to do, and there won't be a person who can understand us or help us with our issues that we are struggling or from school. I started this the African House when I was sixth grade, and it is like it's my house right there, and yeah, she always helped us with our homework and everything. And we would like to for you guys to support us and still be there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank all of you. And who's next? Iris Maria and
Levi
Peran and Cord Bucher.
And as they come up, I think this completes the list of people that had signed up recently, or yesterday, I mean, and came back today. If those folks could come up that Senator just announced. Iris Marie Chavez, Levi Herrera, and Cord Bucher, come up and please. We also have a few people that have traveled 100 miles. It's the policy to take those first. And given the hour, I'm not sure if we'll get beyond that. We will hold another day of public hearing, most likely on Tuesday. And please take a look at the instructions that come up on the postings to see when that will be exactly. Thank you.
Would you guys like me to switch out? Because I'll be here on Tuesday.
That would be fine. And you're who?
Iris.
I thank you.
Should I go ahead?
Yeah.
Good morning, co-chairs and subcommittee. My name is Cord Bucher. I'm the Director of Work Opportunities Training for Portland OIC and Rosemary Anderson High School. We're a community-based organization, and we serve youth from throughout the Portland metropolitan area. We provide alternative education services through Rosemary Anderson High School. We have a campus in North Portland and one in right on the border of Gresham and East Portland in the Rockwood area. We also provide a variety of wraparound services, including mentoring, community outreach, postgraduate support for every student who graduates from Rosemary Anderson High School, and employment training and preparation programs, which is what I oversee there. We're committed to the future success of youth, of these youth through the age of 25, and we try to see them to self-sufficiency. I was here yesterday with six of our Rosemary Anderson High School students. We try whenever possible to expose them to the systems that make policies and decisions that affect them in order to prepare them for that future success and help them become more civically engaged. I couldn't have them come back today. I wanted them to stay at school. But I felt it was important that I return to speak on their behalf and encourage increased funding for the Youth Development Council because it's been vital to us this year. This funding has allowed us to continue and expand our holistic services for youth. The funds have played a role in our educational curriculum, in extracurricular programming, and emergency support services for our youth and their families. The services that we've been able to provide include crisis intervention and counseling support for students and their families. We've been able to get clothing, work supplies, certifications, and transportation assistance for students and graduates who are entering employment. We've been able to help families get emergency funding for housing, utilities, nutrition, medical, and childcare costs to try to remove barriers to their students coming to school and staying engaged. We've been able to provide additional support to youth who are seeking to avoid or exit gang involvement. That includes everything from the aforementioned support services to a Friday night youth basketball program and supplementing the gang enforcement task force work that we've been involved with throughout Portland and East Multnomah County. We've launched innovative new programs that have provided youth with new ways of developing life skills, providing a framework for learning personal growth, and other things that would be otherwise unavailable to them. And so we think it's really important that this funding be increased because I know there are a lot of programs like ours that are working with some of the most vulnerable and marginalized youth in the state of Oregon. This funding has allowed us to expand the variety of interventions and activities that we use to re-engage, redirect, educate, and empower opportunity youth. As we continue to develop our programming, this funding is an invaluable and essential resource to us. And I would strongly encourage you to increase funding for the Oregon Youth Development Council so they can in turn continue to support the community-based solutions and services that interrupt the cycles of generational poverty and youth violence. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you about my support of increasing the funding for education and youth development. My name is Gloria Sandoval, and I am a junior at Sprague High School, as well as a LUS leader for the LUS Latinos Unidos Siempre Youth Organization. Currently, I am striving for acceptance at the Honors College of the University of Oregon, where I intend to complete my undergraduate studies. My ultimate goal is to obtain a PhD in medicine at North Carolina Chapel Hill. I've been an active member of LUS for at least 3 years, for the last 3 years, sorry. I joined because I saw that the organization could offer me many opportunities for growth. Excuse me. Including academic support in a more personal setting. I have been able to practice my leadership skills, develop political awareness, learn about different cultures, including my own, and meet new positive and encouraging people that have now become like family to me. What I enjoy the most is the support I receive from my peers and staff, as well as the fact that I know I'll never be judged. I also like that the youth there are seen as leaders and someone that can help better the community rather than a problem that needs to be fixed. Investing in my future is the best investment you can make. In a couple years, I'll be voting. In the near future, it will be people like me whose work will have to keep our state going. Don't tell us how important we are to you. Show us. Invest in me and watch me succeed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and good luck.
Thank you.
And then the folks that have traveled 100 miles or more are Tim Rusk, Ken Kessner, Molly Rogers, and Michael Lasher.
And this will probably be our last group because we ran over yesterday, I think, a full 20 minutes in committee, and as Mr. Wilson has shared, we will be doing another day of public hearings next week. Our apologies if we didn't get to you.
Please. Go ahead, whoever.
I'm Tim Rusk, so I guess I get to
go
first.
Okay, Tim.
So Tim Rusk, one of the Oregon Relief Nursery directors, and I wanted to share a fact with you that you may not be aware of. The rate of Oregon babies under 1 year old that enter foster care is 50% higher than the national average. And this has been a priority issue for me since 2002 when I started working at the Bend Relief Nursery. It's been a priority issue for Oregon Relief Nurseries for over 30 years. As you all know, the first 1,000 days of a child's life is supremely important. The scientific literature on the importance of this period of time is simply staggering. Nothing replaces an attentive, emotionally available caretaker, and strong attachment between children and their parents fuels success in life. The psychological advantage of knowing someone cares for you is a tremendous advantage, and as you know, it goes far beyond being ready for school. Attachment is the critical ingredient for children to have resilience to weather toxic stress and its implications for health and behavior problems, and an increase in the likelihood of criminal behavior and reliance on public assistance. I encourage you to Google a TED Talk by Nadine Burke Harris, and it's 16 minutes that will just frankly blow your mind.
And the title is?
Pardon?
The title of the talk.
Nadine Burke Harris is the name of the person, and it's a TED Talk.
Well, I know Ted, and I don't know Nadine, but usually the top they have topics.
Yes, yeah, and her topic is on early childhood and the connection between toxic stress and health outcomes.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Oregon Relief Nurseries successfully engage with families with an average of 16 risk factors and their young children. 84% of the parents experience high stress. 49% of the parents have a history of intimate partner and domestic violence. 56% have current mental health issues. 43% are raised by alcoholic or substance abusing parents. And 33% have a history of incarceration or involvement with the criminal justice system. In short, we're working with families where children live in toxic stress. And Portland State University has documented a 70% reduction in the risk of abuse after 6 months of relief nursery services. Now, we all know there's simply not enough money to provide all the services in Oregon that children need. And Oregon Relief Nurseries collectively bring in a dollar of private sector funding for every dollar of state funding, in addition to running strong volunteer programs. We're community-based nonprofits that generate resources and a local commitment to provide early childhood child abuse prevention services. In short, we're looking for a partnership with the state to carry out the important work that we do, and especially to consider an additional $1.4 million in additional dedicated funding to support our satellite programs.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'll let the lady go.
Good morning. Thank you, Senator Monroe and Co-Chair Representative Comp, for allowing me to present today. Members of the committee, my name is Molly Rogers. I'm the director of the Wasco County Department of Youth Services and a member of the Central and Eastern Oregon Juvenile Justice Consortium, and I'm representing the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association today. The Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association supports House Bill 5016. We appreciate the partnership with the Oregon Department of Education and our continued acknowledgement that you served or at risk of entering the juvenile justice system, have a strong need to connect with education services. The county juvenile departments have maintained an active role in the juvenile crime prevention efforts supported through the Youth Development Council, and we appreciate funding for these critical services. Juvenile crime prevention funds were established in 1998 with two purposes and two aspirations: preventing youth from intimate risk for involvement in the juvenile justice system or engaging in delinquency and delinquent acts, and also improving the resiliency factors for these youth. Communities were directed to create collaborative process that collectively engaged the community in the process. Juvenile crime prevention funds from the onset were established with outcomes and evaluations as part of the funding. To this date, we've had amazing outcomes that 61% of the youth have had no prior criminal history and no continued criminal history. 39% of the youth had at least one criminal referral, and then 74% did not have referrals after their participation. There was a 49% decrease in the risk factors for the youth provided services through juvenile crime prevention funds, 59% decrease in the youth who participated as being school dropouts, 43% decrease in chronic truancy. The funding, JCP funding, has leveraged dollars similar to other programs you've heard today because they're a partnership with the state, the counties, and the local education districts or local education schools. They're collaboratively distributed to all communities across the state. One of the key pieces about the juvenile crime prevention funding has been that it acknowledges minimum grants as well as costs per youth and population. It serves all 36 counties, representing one of the small counties and having the smallest counties in my region, that has been a key to maintaining the programs that the youth receive. We appreciate the ongoing relationship, and we're thankful that the funding is in House Bill 5016, and we can appreciate your continued support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Everybody?
Two more.
Go ahead.
My name is Ken Kessner. I'm a commissioner from Lake County down in southeast Oregon. Thank you for having me here. Appreciate it very much. I'm here to support education at large. I'm a strong supporter of education, whether it's from preschool, Head Start, to higher education. I'm not here to say put X amount of dollars to anything. I'm asking support for the Early Learning Hub. I'm a strong believer, as you've heard earlier, in the formative years of kids starting out. And it goes back a lot to the parents. We have some beautiful parents here this morning. Not all parents are engaged or don't know how to get engaged with the kids. But with the kids starting out, I'm married late, so I have no kids of my own. My wife, I have two grandkids, little boys. But how a kid starts out is essential for the path in life, yeah. Where they are behind we hear about, you know, increased crime and things like that. Others who have had good parents and engaged and is on tune usually have a path that leads on to success in our society. I'll use the analogy of two ships leaving ports, one out of SeaTac, one out of Long Beach. One has a compass of life that makes it across the ocean successful. Another one may wander if it doesn't have that formative year's compass. So my emphasis today is I support all education. I grew up on a farm in southeast Arkansas. That's my dialect. I was the first kid of six to gain a BS degree, a master's, and I influenced my youngest brother to also go to college. The formative years is where you form your hunger to learn, and that hunger to learn lasts a lifetime and denotes the success of a person. We have funding for K-12. I fully support that. We have funding for higher education. I fully support that. We have funding for kindergarten. I'm engaged with our local Head Start, beautiful program, but they have a waiting list. And as you know, for a lower income, and then preschool, we've been struggling to get preschool, and that's for parents who can pay. There's a gap in between that we all know about. What Early Learning Hub, I'll back up a little bit. We commissioners kind of are liaisons to different programs, and one of the other commissioners was with CCNF, and as that went apart, I kind of jumped in on the early learning, not knowing what it was, but it's one of my greatest passion now, amongst all the other things I do. The biggest thing, I can use examples from Lake County, but I emphasize it's not just Lake County, it's kids across our state, from Astoria to Jordan Valley, from Joseph to Cave Junction,
yeah.
All in between. It's everybody, all of our kids. Our kids, well, I'll back
thank
up.
You, and we're going to have to go on.
Okay.
Yeah, because got this other gentleman. That was a great deal of wisdom, though, I want you to know. I've been in education for 50 years, and you said it really well. Thank you.
Hello, my name is, thank you, Ken. My name is Michael Lasher. I'm the superintendent of Douglas ESD, and Douglas ESD is also the home of the South Central Early Learning Hub. South Central Early Learning Hub includes Lake County, where Ken's from. It includes Douglas County, and it will soon include Klamath County. We have a very large geographic area. We have a lot of poverty in our region. As you might imagine, rural Oregon has been decimated, and it's not coming back at the same speed that perhaps Portland is when it comes to economic growth and vitality. I want to tell you a story about one program that the Early Learning Hub is funding through the Early Literacy Grants and the importance of keeping, and it illustrates the importance of keeping money in early learning and supporting the work of the Early Learning Division as a part of the Oregon Department of Ed. Glide, Oregon, lost their mill. They have a lot of poor people there. They also have situations, although Glide and the community are very tight, Glide School District and the community are very tight, there's always a lot of people, and we all know them, that had very bad experiences in schools when they were younger, and they don't really gravitate their children to that. The program that Glide is doing with the help from the Early Learning Hub is doing a community outreach to young families that have children that are going to be coming into kindergarten, providing them with supplies and reading materials through the Early Literacy Grant, and also teaching those parents the value and the importance of giving of being a part of their child's education prior to them coming into kindergarten. One of the most phenomenal parts about this, although they've done this at the school, the funds from the Early Learning Hub have allowed them to reach out to the homeless camp, which is basically the RV park that's upriver. People do not have money to drive into school if the kids are not, and it's, you know, it's 10, 20 miles away. They're taking this same program out there and meeting the parents in the RV park that are living in tents and RVs They know about these kids there because their older siblings are in school or they find this out. And it has been so incredibly well received by the families there to know that somebody in the schools care about them and are making the effort to come and meet them where they are. There's no judgment, but we value all the kids that are in our school districts, and the early learning hubs and the early learning division make that possible, and your continued support will mean a lot to those boys and girls throughout Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate everybody coming. We will have another hearing next week on Tuesday, probably, and probably at 8:30. We don't know what room it'll be in. That'll be announced later. But we want to hear from everybody that wants to give us input. Please understand, this subcommittee was not given a printing press. Our job is to prioritize scarce resources. There's not enough money to fund all of the programs at the level we would like to fund them. But we will be asked to try and prioritize what's most important and maybe what's a little bit less important in terms of the scarce dollars that are available. It's a tough job. Almost virtually everybody on this subcommittee has a long history of involvement in public education, really cares about public education, and so we will do the job that the voters elected us to the best of our ability. Meanwhile, if you haven't had a chance to testify yet, we hope you will come back next Tuesday. We want to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Co-Chair Monroe.
Representative Comp.
We have about 18 to 20 students, it looks like, from Corbett High School that came in. Hello. I'm glad you're here.
Welcome. We're adjourned.